She hadn't heard of a slideshow program, but one would be wrong. The posters were supplemental to the slideshow. She'd worked extra hard to get them done in time. As she motioned for him to come up to the front, Nick groaned inwardly. He should have picked a worse subject to do the report on. Not even Globe was going to drag them down enough with her putting out this kind of effort.
"Class, it seems one of today's teams brought along some materials that would be inconvenient to store, so they've kindly volunteered to start us off today," Dean Blaine told the students, as Alice ordered Nick around behind him, the duo quickly setting up their posters and loading the presentation onto the computer.
"I'm sure all of you feel just devastated by this loss of opportunity, but please try to keep your disappointment to yourself."
A polite chuckle rippled through the class. People learn early on to laugh at the jokes of those in charge, and that goes for supers just as much as humans. Dean Blaine cast a glance back at Alice, who flashed him a grin and a thumbs up, so he continued,
"It seems our group is ready. I urge you to give them your full attention and ask any relevant questions once they are finished. Remember, participation is a vital part of my class."
With that, Dean Blaine took a seat at a desk formerly occupied by one of the ever-mounting number of students who had washed out. Nick cleared his throat and stepped to the center of the classroom. He'd managed to talk Alice into letting him speak on the grounds that he had more practice at it than she, truth, and that he would give a better presentation overall because of that, lie. The reality was that he wanted to control the flow of the presentation, hindering where he could and helping it if he had to. Nick was determined to squeak out of this incident as nothing more than an afterthought in the minds of the class, no matter how much effort it took.
"Alice and I chose something of a controversial hero for our presentation," Nick began. "In fact, I think many would argue whether he should still even be rightly categorized as one. Certainly there have been outcries by some to strip him of any semblance of that title, even in reference to the years he served dutifully as one. There is some validity to those opinions, just as there is some in the belief of a few people that this hero was a victim of some deeper problem, or that his fall from grace was orchestrated. Today, we are going to look over the known life, and ultimately the demise, of a hero with the code name Globe."
Nick's monologue was interrupted by a loud crack that echoed through the room. The source was immediately visible as a part of Chad's desk fell heavily to the floor. Chad hastily rose from his seat.
"I'm so sorry about the interruption."
Chad apologized to Nick.
"My hand slipped while I was resting it on the corner of my desk. I think I must be feeling ill, so I'll excuse myself to the infirmary and let you get back to your work. Again, very sorry."
Without so much as a glance for confirmation to Dean Blaine, Chad strode out of the room.
"Okay. Right then," Nick said,
damning that blonde bastard for making sure this presentation would stick in the mind of every single person in attendance.
"Anyway, Globe first appeared as the top graduate in his year of the Hero Certification Program."
46.
"I assume you know why you're here, Vince,"
Coach George said, as the silver-haired youth entered his sparse office and took a seat down on the opposite end of George's considerably wide desk.
"No, sir," Vince lied.
"Good boy,"
Coach George complimented him.
"Never give away more information than you have to. No sense in confessing to a crime I might not know about."
Vince blinked in surprise,
unsure of how to react to such a statement.
"It's the right strategy,"
Coach George continued.
"Unfortunately for you, it's not any good in this case. You're here because of the fight you and Michael had on Saturday night."
"I'm not sure what you mean," Vince said.
"The point at which a lie is exposed is when you give it up for a better one. You don't cling on to the one that's no good anymore. Now, I've got a full report from Thomas Castillo about how he and some friends pulled your ass out of a mini glacier. Let's be clear here. I didn't call you in to dock you or punish you for having an unsanctioned fight,"
Coach George informed him. I wouldn't really call a jumping much of a fight," Vince admitted, taking the coach's advice and giving up on denial.
"Get in enough of them, and you will,"
Coach George assured him.
"Now, I don't really care that much about the fighting. I know we make a big deal in the beginning, but that's mostly just to cover our own asses legally. My concern is about what I read in this report."
"What do you mean?" Vince asked.
"I mean, Michael had you dead to rights. It didn't sound like there was any real struggle between you two from how unharmed Michael was. I know what your power is, kid. And I know they never successfully found a limit on how much energy you can absorb. You should have at least given that little nut job a run for his money. So I want to know how much power you had stored up when that guy surprised you,"
Coach George demanded. "Enough," Vince said, crossing his arms and sitting back in the chair.
"See, that's the one amount we know you didn't have. Enough,"
Coach George shot back.
"You threw one fire punch in your ranking matches, and this time, I'm guessing you only had enough heat stored up to fight hypothermia while you got the shit knocked out of you. We both know you can do a lot more than this, so I want an answer. Why are you trying to scrape by on the bare minimum with your power?"
"I'm not," Vince replied. "I work as hard as anyone out there. I run, I lift, I train. I do everything you ask to get stronger and prepare myself for combat."
"You do,"
Coach George agreed.
"That's why I'm taking time out of my day to have this conversation, rather than just drumming you out of the program immediately."
Vince's eyes widened slightly. He'd been expecting a lot of things, but expulsion from the program had seemed too extreme for just one fight. "I have issues with my power sometimes," Vince said carefully. Coach George looked at him for a moment, then spoke again in a lower tone.
"Look, kid, let's just put our cards on the table here. I know about you and the rest of your Petri dish dorm. Of course they were going to tell the people who were supposed to help teach you."
The last part was proactive, accurately anticipating the question Vince had been about to interrupt him with.
"You say you've got issues with your power? Well, I've got issues with people who can't use the very thing that qualifies them for this course in the first place. This is your only chance. If I were you, I'd try really hard to convince me there's some reason you should stay."
George had expected another snappy comeback, but to his surprise, the kid lowered his head a bit and seemed to genuinely think. Most men his age would have assumed that it was a bluff and made up some crap to throw back as an answer, but the kid with the goofy silver hair was being rational about it. George readied himself to actually listen to what Vince would say, a courtesy he wouldn't have normally extended. "If the procedure isn't permanent, and Alice loses control, what happens?" Vince asked at last.
"She starts free-floating around the place again,"
Coach George replied. "And Mary?"
"She won't be able to block out the voices.
What about Nick and Herschel? Vince asked again.
Nick, God only knows what. And Herschel would start shifting uncontrollably to Roy again.
Coach George answered.
I assume you're building toward a point here?
I am, Vince answered. And this is it. If the procedure isn't permanent, if I lose control again like I did before, what happens?
You have an entire faculty of capable supers to keep you in check,
Coach George told him. A faculty that can only react, Vince pointed out. You can't anticipate. That means, for you to contain me, something has to have already happened. If it happens when I'm down here, then it's probably no big deal. But I have normal classes, too, and I eat lunch in the dining halls, and that's time I spend with regular humans. Humans who wouldn't be able to survive a sudden wildfire or a lightning bolt to the chest.
You're scared of hurting other people?
Coach George asked. Yes, I'm terrified of it, Vince said. I want to be a hero to help people, to use my abilities the way my dad always told me I should. I want it more than I've wanted anything in my life, aside from control of my powers. I will work hard, and I will do what you say, but I won't absorb more energy than I have to until I'm positive that I won't lose that control. If you have to kick me out, then you have to kick me out. I'm not endangering innocent people for the sake of my own ambition, though. George stared down at the skinny boy sitting across from him. All the training had stacked a little muscle on his shoulders, but he still gave off a lean, almost shrimpy impression. Physically, this kid was nothing worth taking a second look at. His eyes, though, that was a whole other story. George had seen a lot of tough talk in his years of dealing with kids who grew up stronger than everyone else. What he hadn't seen near enough was eyes filled with determination and integrity. Eyes like the blue set that were meeting his gaze from across the table.
I'll give you 1 year, Coach George said eventually. You can keep up this tentative crap until the end of your freshman year. As long as you keep up the work in gym and the start of combat training, I think you can keep pace with the slower half of the class.
Really? Vince asked dumbly, unable to disguise the shock in his voice.
Yeah, really, Coach George confirmed. Be warned, though, this is all you get. At the end of this year, you either make peace with the necessity of using your power, or don't bother coming back. Starting second year with that attitude won't just put you at risk, but people who will be depending on you as well.
I understand, Vince nodded.
Good. Now get out of here. You've still got a few minutes before gym,
Coach George said, gesturing to the door. I will. Thanks, Vince said lamely.
Thank me by working hard,
Coach George told him, and Vince exited his office with a quick nod of agreement. George, on the other hand, leaned back in his chair and savored the few moments of solitude he had left before he'd have to ride and demean the remainder of the freshman class. He reflected back on his talk with Vince, going through the boy's logic and motivation in his head once more.
I'll say this for him, Coach George mumbled out loud. That kid has the same brass balls as his dad.
47. How are the presentations going? Mr. Numbers asked as he entered Dean Blaine's office.
Fine, save for one student having a very bad reaction to the name Globe, Dean Blaine replied. Where's your other half? I asked to see both of you.
He's in Moscow, tending to some company business, Mr. Numbers lied. Mr. Transport was actually in Kenya, but Dean Blaine didn't need to know that.
I suppose the job must come first,
Dean Blaine acknowledged.
Still, I assume you'll provide him with a full record of our conversation?
Of course.
Excellent. I really wanted you down here to touch base on your charges and see how they're adapting outside of my class,
Dean Blaine said.
They're doing better, Mr. Numbers replied. Mary and Alice seem to be pursuing a friendship with one another, albeit at a halting pace. The others are growing more interconnected as well, and even Roy has been on better behavior. Of course, the project helped them with branching out their social circle quite a bit. Thank you again for that.
It was a small concession to assist my students, Dean Blaine said, waving it off. It was a good idea, too. I might actually continue using it in years to come. It gave a lot of the remaining students an excuse to get to know one another.
On that note, how many do we have left?
We're down to approximately 40 students. I suspect by the time George finishes, the number will be closer to 35. Usually, those who can survive the first semester make it to the end of freshman year,
Dean Blaine said.
50% left? That's a pretty high rate for a freshman class. Is George going easy on them?
Mr. Numbers asked.
Quite the contrary. He seems to get harsher as the years go by, and Persephone hardly tempers him at all anymore,
Dean Blaine commented.
That's good, though, Mr. Numbers said. Anyone who can't even make it through this will have a breakdown 2 weeks into being a hero.
Agreed, Dean Blaine said. It's a very difficult job. I was quite thrilled to leave the combat field once this administration position became available.
I'm surprised they don't try to bring you back. Your power is so unique. It made the difference in a lot of fights,
Mr. Numbers said.
Well, thank you, but now I'm sure there's another hero with a unique power to make that difference. Times change, and we must change with them. Those of us not blessed with enhanced physical attributes are lucky if we can make it to 30 as a hero. There were some good times, but this is where I do my good now. To that effect, is there any other assistance you require from my end to help bond the students?
I think the project accomplished what we needed, Mr. Numbers told him. Besides, Mary is doing an excellent job bringing them together on her own, and Mr. Transport and I have a few activities planned to strengthen their unity.
I do hope one of those activities will get Mr. Reynolds to begin using his powers,
Dean Blaine commented.
Ah, yes, Vince. We're unsure what to do about him. He's clearly afraid of his own abilities, or afraid the treatment will prove to be temporary,
Mr. Numbers said.
That would match well with the report I received from George,
Dean Blaine agreed.
Normally, we would have him work through those fears, but in this case, they're actually very realistic things to be scared of. This will be something he either finds a way through, or he doesn't,
Mr. Numbers said.
It would be a shame to lose a super with such potential, but that is the way things go,
Dean Blaine said.
At any rate, I thank you for your time. And tell Mr. Transport that the next time I schedule a meeting, I expect him to make time for it.
Of course, Dean,
Mr. Numbers said respectfully.
Oh, one quick question. You said one of the students had a bad reaction to the name Globe. Which student?
Chad Taylor, the number one male rank.
Very odd,
Mr. Numbers agreed.
I just wanted to be sure it wasn't one of our charges. I'll leave you to your work. Have a good day, Dean Blaine.
And you, Mr. Numbers,
Dean Blaine echoed. Mr. Numbers stepped out of the office and made his way through the underground area toward the lifts. Finally away from the dean, his mind was kicking back into its regular gear. Just as well, too. Mr. Numbers now had some additional research on his plate. First and foremost, though, Mr. Numbers needed to get their plans for winter break squared away. He and Mr. Transport had hatched a lovely scheme to bond their students together, but it was taking far more prep work than originally expected. If it worked, though, then it would be well worth the effort. Unfortunately, that effort was eating what little free time he possessed. He hadn't even had time to pop by town and pick up more puzzles. It was frustrating to be a man as brilliant as Mr. Numbers, with nothing to take his mind off of that brilliance. 48.
Because there are certain things about my life you just don't need to know,
said the exasperated voice from the other end of the cell phone.
But, Daddy, don't you think the fact that you were part of a really famous team of heroes might have been something your daughter would have wanted to know about?
Alice shot back. After weeks of trying, she had finally managed to track down her father and get him on the phone, though the results weren't panning out exactly as lucratively as she'd expected.
Given what we were famous for, no. I felt it was something better left in the past,
Charles told her.
And given that many of the records about the incident were sealed, and we agreed to keep it confidential, that only added to my motivation. Now, I'm in the middle of a very important meeting here, so was there anything else you needed?
No, Daddy. That was it,
Alice said stiffly.
Good, then. Study hard. Finals are right around the corner.
I will, Daddy.
Of course. I love you, Alice. I'll call you soon,
Charles said.
Love you, too,
Alice all but mumbled. There was the click of disconnection, and then Alice was just sitting in her room holding a cell phone. She wasn't sure why she felt any surprise. It had always been like this. He was a kind father, and he was good to her when he was around, but he was always so sectioned off, so sealed away. Alice often wondered what it was like to have warmth in a person's life. Not just tolerance or caring, but genuine joy at someone's company. She wasn't sure, but she suspected she was getting closer to it here than she ever had at home. And as bad as her phone call had been, that thought cheered her slightly. Well, that and the fact that she was still riding high on getting the best grade in the class so far for their presentation. Nick had seemed oddly unexcited by it, but it felt good knowing she had set the bar for the others to follow. There were still more presentations on Thursday, but she was confident that they would not be easily dethroned. A soft knock rapped at the door.
Come in, Mary,
Alice called. The boys couldn't get into the girls' lounge area unless they were let in, so the only person who could be knocking on her door was her fellow Melbrook female. The door was pushed open, and Mary entered.
Hey, the guys are going to the dining hall in, like, 10 minutes. I thought I'd see if you wanted to come,
Mary offered. Alice did her best to keep a sneer of disgust from rippling across her face. Her little understanding of dormitory food held it in the esteem of old vomit and fresh excrement. Still, it was nearing the end of the first semester, and she'd yet to set foot in one of these establishments. Not to mention it was where the rest of her, maybe not yet friends, but associates, gathered to dine, so if she was serious about trying to get closer to people, this was one of her best opportunities.
I think I would like that very much,
Alice lied. Mary chuckled.
You know, it really isn't that bad. We shall see,
Alice said skeptically, rising from her feet and sliding on her shoes. In truth, the food wasn't that bad, and what was lacking in culinary refinement was made up for with the experience of sitting around with people Alice was growing ever more comfortable with, complaining and laughing about their classes and day-to-day lives. It would have been an overall positive experience, except for the fact that a girl who has been raised with dietitians and organic diets most of her life has a very poor tolerance for things deep-fried in grease. Alice would never admit it, but as she spent the next few hours unwillingly regurgitating her last meal, along with a few others, she still felt like it had been an overall good idea to eat with the others. She also made a mental note that, from here on out, she would be bringing her own damn food.
Thank you for that wonderful presentation on Lord Pholos, Mr. Riley and Miss Dixon,
Dean Blaine said, as the two students bowed to polite applause from the class. Eventually, they collected their materials and went to their seats, so Dean Blaine retook his customary spot at the front of the classroom.
That concludes our presentations, and I do hope you all got a lot out of doing them,
Dean Blaine said, addressing the class.
Actually, yeah,
Stella interrupted in her usual style.
It put things in a new perspective to actually see some of the hard calls our guy had to make in his career. Even though they worked out, they might not have. That's some crazy kind of pressure.
Precisely what I wanted you to realize, Dean Blaine said with a smile. We have a tremendous program here for getting your bodies in the condition necessary to be heroes. The harder part, in my opinion, is training your minds to understand what a hero is, and what they should strive for. It's a lot of responsibility, and the stress from it has broken more than one super with awe-inspiring abilities. Now, we've put a lot of time into this project, but after today, we'll be easing up on the throttle a bit,
Dean Blaine continued.
We'll still be having our discussions, of course, but I understand you all have finals in your other classes to prepare for. Since this course runs for 2 semesters, what you just did counts as the midterm for the class. But you can think of it as the final for this semester.
There wasn't quite cheering from the class, but there was a noticeable elevation of everyone's mood. Finding out they could cross a class off of their finals list early was welcome news to any student. Ever.
I'll still expect you to all show up and participate, of course, Dean Blaine clarified. I just want you to know there won't be any other projects this semester. There is one particularly important class you'll need to attend, though. I've lined up a guest speaker for next Tuesday's class, and I expect full attendance. That means mental and physical. This will be an important step in developing a hero's mindset, so I want you to come sharp and ready to listen.
Who's the speaker?
Stella asked.
If I were going to tell you, don't you think I would have mentioned it in that extensive preamble?
Dean Blaine retorted.
Point,
Stella said, leaning back in her chair.
The speaker is a surprise, but I hope you will take my word that their words will be worth hearing. Grade-shatteringly worth hearing, in fact,
Dean Blaine said, adding no inflection to his voice. The meaning came through loud and clear, though. Miss this class and find a new reason to be at Lander. 49. What do you think he's got planned for Tuesday? Vince asked Nick, as the two flopped down in the boys' lounge after gym.
Hookers, Nick replied without a pause.
You think the dean is going to bring hookers to a class centered on ethics?
A man can dream,
Nick sighed longingly.
Vince shook his head, a habit that was growing more and more frequent the longer he knew Nick. I'm just glad we're done with the graded work in his class for the semester. My other classes are starting to seem a lot scarier now that it's almost finals time. I know what you mean, Nick half-lied. He did understand Vince's plight from an objective standpoint. It was just one that he had never found himself in. I think most of my weekend will be spent meeting up with others in the class and getting a study group organized, Vince speculated. Hopefully, if we share knowledge, I can cram enough between now and then to scrape through. Don't worry too much about that, Nick told him. You think it'll be okay? I have no idea. I just think you should be worrying more about whatever test they'll give us in gym, and less about ones with the highest danger potential of a paper cut, Nick explained. Why would gym do a test? The combat matches are at the end of the year, Vince pointed out. We're only halfway there. Nick could have pointed out that after the break was when the class format would change, and students would no longer be able to battle to change their ranks, so it was only logical that the coaches would utilize one last testing activity before deciding who would be combat and who wouldn't. He didn't, though. Instead, he just said, "It's a chance to torture us. You see them just letting that pass by?" I hate to say it, but you make a point, Vince admitted. Thanks for that, by the way. Now I'm even more stressed. Always here to help, Nick chuckled. At least you have an ace in the hole, Vince said. I mean, worst case scenario, you can crank up your luck and just fill in test answers randomly. I bet that power comes in really handy. The 10-year-old boy sitting at the blackjack table took a sip of his soda, but otherwise kept his eyes intent on the game. He had sandy hair and was a little tall for his age, though it was clear he still had ample growing left to do. The boy wore a striped collared shirt and jeans, along with a pair of black-framed glasses he had to keep pushing up onto the bridge of his nose. The only other people at the table were the dealer, a woman who had money but not much sense or sobriety, and a well-built, balding man wearing a black suit.
"Why exactly is your son sitting at a blackjack table in the middle of the day?" Miss Anders asked. She was nervous, but doing her best not to show it. She was new to the Las Vegas branch of Child Protective Services, so, of course, when the time for Miss Pip's yearly review had come around, it was Miss Anders who'd been handed the job. Unfortunately, Miss Anders wasn't quite new enough not to have heard any rumors, so while she'd been willing to come, it hadn't been without a large sense of hesitation that was now slowly eroding into fear. The two women were sitting at a small table a few feet away from where the boy was watching the blackjack game.
"Because I have to work," Miss Pipps answered. "And unless you've found a reliable sitter service in this town, I think you answered your own question."
"I more meant, why is Nick not in school today? It's April, so summer break isn't for another month," Miss Anders clarified.
"I take it you didn't read his full history before our meeting,"
Miss Pipps deduced.
"My son has to be homeschooled because of his condition. The public school system declared him too dangerous to attend with the other children. Since I can't take off every day to teach him, I hired a tutor. I'm not sure what he's learning right now, but I trust the man's teaching methods implicitly."
"I see," Miss Anders said. "And just to be clear, when you say condition..."
"Nick is a powered. He has uncontrollable luck. Good and bad. After the day he found $1,000 on the playground and was in the bathroom when all of the toilets exploded due to a plumbing mishap, he was officially deemed unacceptable at any institution of learning,"
Miss Pip said matter-of-factly.
"Yes, of course. My apologies for bringing that up."
Miss Anders was trying very hard to act less flustered than she was feeling.
Now, you've had Nick for 9 years now, correct?
Ever since my sister and her husband had their car accident. Lord rest her soul.
And in those years, how do you feel that Nick has developed emotionally? I mean, living with a Vegas casino owner must be a unique childhood,
Miss Anders said.
Nick walks around every day with the knowledge that, because of a fluke of birth, he could die at any minute. A plane could fall from the sky, or a truck could hit him while he's in the shower. He has to deal with his mortality in a much more real way than the rest of us ever have. I don't think my son ever had a chance at an existence that wasn't unique.
Miss Pipps answered.
An excellent point, Miss Anders said. That takes care of the preliminary work. I just wanted to introduce myself and get some initial information. As you know, in the next few weeks I'll speak with you and Nick, both together and separately, just to make sure he's adapting well to his environment.
I'm familiar with the process by this point,
Miss Pip said with a surprisingly reassuring smile.
Though, to my knowledge, I'm also the only foster parent in this city with no complaints or reports who still receives yearly checkups.
The standard procedure, I assure you,
Miss Anders lied, gathering her notes and hastily rising from the table.
I'll give you a call to set up another appointment.
I'll look forward to it,
Miss Pipps replied, rising as well.
It was a pleasure meeting you, Miss Anders. Enrique will escort you out.
As if by magic, a muscular man stepped into view and waited patiently as Miss Anders finished grabbing her things, then quietly followed her as she found her way to the door. Only after Enrique had returned and confirmed that she was in her car and out of earshot did Miss Pipps make her way over to the blackjack table where the boy was sitting.
So sorry, dear, but I have to speak with my dealer for a moment. Please feel free to try your luck at another table and tell them to get you something top shelf on me for the inconvenience,
Miss Pipps said to the woman, still tossing away her cash in the vain hopes of getting 21.
"'Okay,' she slurred. "'Needed to change anyway. Got no luck at this table.'
With that, she stumbled away in search of another place to settle down and piss away time and funds.
"'Okay, Nick,'
Miss Pipps said as soon as the woman was gone.
What's the count?
Deck's almost done,
Nick replied, adjusting his glasses once more and double-checking his numbers.
There should still be 2 threes, a 4, 2 fives, 3 sevens, an 8, a 9, 2 jacks, and a king.
Jerry?
Miss Pipps asked.
Spot on by my count,
said the large, balding man in the suit.
Good job.
Miss Pipps praised him. She then turned her attention on the dealer.
Tom, was he showing any tells you noticed?
He fiddles with his glasses when he's adding and scratches the velvet with his right index finger when he's mentally removing cards from what's left in the deck,
Tom replied quickly.
Nice observations, Tom,
Miss Pipps said.
Thanks for helping out today. Go ahead and get lunch at the restaurant on me.
Thank you, Miss Pipps,
the dealer said respectfully. He knew when he was being hustled off, and he had been at the casino long enough to know he should take the free lunch and get out of the way.
Impressive,
Miss Pipps said, patting Nick on the head.
You tricked one of our better dealers with both fake tells. Plus, he didn't even catch on that the glasses were fake.
They aren't,
Nick replied. Miss Pipps raised an eyebrow.
Excuse me?
They aren't fake,
Nick repeated.
When Jerry took me to get some, I realized that without a distortion it would be obvious to anyone observant that the lenses weren't real. I knew that would bust me off the bat, so instead I had Jerry forge a prescription that would show distortion, but wouldn't mess up my near sight so much that I couldn't see the cards.
That true, Jerry?
Yes, ma'am,
Jerry replied.
Nick saw the hole in the plan and told me how he wanted it filled.
Ha!
Miss Pips barked a laugh.
And here I thought Tom was losing his touch. That was smart, Nick. I didn't think you'd find that one so easily.
You'll have to do better next time,
Nick said with a genuine smile.
And so will you, my little con man. So will you,
Miss Pip said, smiling back.
Okay, Jerry, let's get the glasses off of him before he damages his sight for real. After that, take him over to Fleece and have Nick work on his hand skills.
Miss Pips, I feel I would be remiss if I did not inform you that Fleece is set up over at the Bareback this week,
Jerry brought up.
So?
Miss Pips asked.
Given the mature nature of that club, I feel Nick might be too young to visit Fleece at that location,
Jerry said.
He's 10 years old, Jerry, and it's just a strip club. He nursed from tits when he was a baby. It's not like they've changed a lot in the last decade,
Miss Pip said.
Yes, ma'am,
Jerry said obediently. His tenure and loyalty to Miss Pips had earned him the right to bring possible problems and objections to her attention when it seemed necessary. Miss Pips trusted that he had the best interests of the family at heart. But no one had the right to argue back with her once she had laid down her decision.
One more thing. Do some digging on our new CPS rep. I don't think she'll be much of a problem, but she's got an idealistic streak in her, and I'd rather be prepared,
Miss Pip said.
Yes, ma'am,
Jerry repeated.
Okay, Nick, you work hard for Fleece today,
Miss Pip said, turning her attention back to the boy.
Yes, Miss Pips,
Nick said respectfully.
I'll check with Fleece after. If you can get 3 solid pulls today, I'll let Jerry do some work on misdirection with you later tonight.
Thank you, Miss Pips,
Nick replied. He loved working with Jerry, and misdirection was one of his favorite subjects, so he knew he'd have to really try and get those pulls this afternoon.
Be good,
Miss Pips told him with a kiss on the cheek.
And always remember, luck is for tourists and losers. Winners cheat.
She and Nick finished together in unison, as they had since she taught him the motto when he was first diagnosed as a powered all those years ago. I bet that power comes in really handy.
Hell yeah, it does,
Nick replied. Who knows how I'd get by without it? 50.
Anything good going on this weekend?
Alex asked, as he and Herschel sat down in the dining hall.
Not that I've heard of. I think most people are freaking out about finals on the horizon and speculating on Tuesday's mystery speaker,
Herschel replied.
Yeah, that's about what I've come up with, too. That sucks. There's usually a video game tournament or some other dorm-sponsored event on any given weekend,
Alex complained, adjusting his tray to try and find a point of attack on the noodle surprise he had been served.
Don't you hate when class messes with college?
Herschel joked.
That I do,
Alex said.
On the plus side, I heard there's a big party going on next weekend held by one of the upperclassmen. Every person in our class is invited.
Herschel held his breath and tried to covertly scout the room to see if anyone was paying the pair attention. Not seeing any turned heads or huddled groups whispering, he decided to breeze over Alex's almost fuck-up and hope no one had heard.
Sounds fun, Herschel said. Nice of them to invite us freshmen. Apparently, it's a tradition to let those of us who haven't dropped out by this point participate. Plus, from what I've heard, our gym final is going to be brutal, so the experienced ones are showing us a bit more kindness,
Alex explained.
No idea what that's going to be yet, huh? Herschel asked. No more than you. It's a pretty tightly guarded secret. The only thing I've been able to uncover is that it's really intense.
That part I could have guessed,
Herschel commented.
Oh well, a party sounds fun. Roy's been good lately, so it'll be nice for him to blow off some steam.
Ah, so you're going as Roy then? Alex asked.
Well, yeah. Parties are kind of his bread and butter,
Herschel said.
No, I understand and all. It's just that... Well, I haven't made a whole lot of friends at Lander besides you, so I was kind of hoping I'd have someone there I already knew. And Roy is cool and all, but he and I don't get along quite the same.
Alex said, working to avoid meeting Herschel's eyes as he spoke. Herschel gave thought to his words before answering. He hadn't seen Alex really hang out with anyone besides him and his roommates, and given what he believed his power to be, it made a certain amount of sense. Most of the other supers probably thought of him as idiotic or deranged.
It might be nice to actually get to go out for once,
Herschel said tentatively.
You sure that's okay? I don't want to accidentally cause problems for you two.
I'm not, but now that we've talked about it, Roy will remember the conversation next time he comes around, and I can see how he feels about it.
He's been really focused ever since his fight with Chad. He doesn't even go out too much anymore. I'd say there's a decent chance he'll let me have this one without objection, or at least agree to change halfway through,
Herschel said.
That'd be cool,
Alex said.
Yeah. You know, I think this would make the first party since I changed that I actually go as Herschel instead of Roy.
Better hope it's a good one, then, Alex chuckled.
Better hope it's not too good, or Roy's gonna be pissed he missed,
Herschel pointed out.
Agreed. We will hope for a good party, but not a great one,
Alex said, lifting his soda in toast.
Here's to a lackluster but still entertaining party,
Herschel said, lifting his own in suit. Glancing around, he realized that while Alex's earlier comment may have passed unnoticed, their impromptu toasting was definitely gathering a few odd stares from throughout the cafeteria. Herschel felt less bothered by it than he would have expected. 51.
Good afternoon, class.
Dean Blaine greeted his students Tuesday morning, entering the already full classroom with a slightly shorter, far more nervous man in tow.
I'm glad to see all of you could make it to listen to today's guest speaker. Your commitment to learning has been noted.
Nick was staring at the man who had come with Dean Blaine, clearly their guest speaker. He was twitchy, obviously uncomfortable with crowds, and his appearance was slightly unkempt. Nick could only guess what status this man must have to have garnered the podium away from Dean Blaine.
Now, I'm sure you're all curious to hear from today's speaker, so I'll turn things over to him in just a moment. Before he begins, though, I would like you all to realize that this man has come as a personal favor, and I expect him to be treated with the same respect you would show to me. I'll consider anything less than that as a very personal offense,
Dean Blaine spelled out clearly.
With that said, I give you Jacob Stewart.
The shorter man, Jacob, moved from behind Dean Blaine and took the dean's usual spot at the front of the room. He glanced around uncertainly and fiddled with his hands. After a few seconds of fumbling, Jacob took a deep breath and composed himself before he began to speak.
As your dean said, my name is Jacob Stewart. What he didn't mention is that I'm a Poward.
To say a ripple of surprise went through the class would be like saying that fish are somewhat inclined toward water over land when handed a choice.
It was kept in check, though, and it became immediately clear exactly why Dean Blaine had put such emphasis on respecting their speaker.
Your dean felt that you would all benefit from hearing about things from the perspective of someone who can't control their abilities.
Jacob continued, blowing past the ripple of shock because, well, he had already been expecting it.
I think he is either an optimist to the point of idiocy, or you must be the most open-minded class of supers in the history of the world. From the looks on your faces, though, I'm sad to say it's seeming closer to the former than the latter.
Scowls and sneers were pulled up short, as some supers realized they were showing too much on their face. Nick continued a steady leer, not so angry as to draw attention, but unhappy enough that anyone who glanced at him wouldn't mistake him as sympathetic to the plight of a Poward.
My ability is teleportation, and it activates every time I sneeze,
Jacob said.
I can't control where I go, or how far away I land from where I started out. I seem to have some natural sense of preservation, though, because I never teleport into an object or 5 miles up in the air. I'm always safe, just horribly inconvenienced. That's more or less all you need to know about me, so why don't we go ahead and let you ask any questions you might have? I'm sure most of you have never had occasion to talk to a Poward, after all.
If you accidentally teleport when you sneeze, why don't you just teleport back afterward?
Stella blurted out in typical fashion.
Because I can't,
Jacob replied.
But you just said you had the ability of teleportation,
Stella kept probing.
Yes. When I sneeze, I teleport uncontrollably. And that's the only time I can do it. Unless I'm sneezing, I can't teleport any more than I can turn lead into gold,
Jacob explained.
I get that you have the accidental thing,
Stella continued.
I'm just asking why you never learned to use your power outside of the trigger, so you could do it whenever you wanted.
Let me ask you something, young lady. What's your power?
Jacob asked in response.
I turn into steel.
That sounds like a good one,
Jacob complimented her.
But why don't you ever try flying instead?
Because that's not my power,
Stella said slowly.
I told you I turn into steel.
And I told you I teleport when I sneeze. I don't have the power to teleport at will, any more than you have the power to fly. There's a common misconception that Powards are too lazy or stupid to master our gifts, when the reality is that we just don't have that ability. Trust me, this isn't a lifestyle choice.
A well-manicured hand near the front raised slowly in the air.
Yes?
Jacob said, gesturing to the girl asking the question.
Do you hate supers?
Alice asked. The class reacted visibly, and Nick nearly fell out of his chair.
What was that crazy bitch doing, drawing attention to herself in this kind of discussion? They needed to slide by and pray for class to end swiftly.
I'm sorry, I think I misheard you,
Jacob said.
You didn't,
Alice said.
I asked if you hated supers. Your ability must make having any kind of normal life nearly impossible. Yet, when you look around, there are people with all of the gift and none of the burden, being idolized and worshipped by society. If not for a variant in your genetic coding, that might very well have been you.
So, do you hate us?
Of course I do,
Jacob told her.
Every Powered hates supers, and not just for the reasons you listed. While you are elite and special, we're looked at as a type of disabled person. We're considered lesser citizens, a social burden that people have to put up with. Most people think of us as nothing more than the price they pay for having supers and heroes. So, of course, I hate you. But not violently, just achingly. Aching for what might have been. I've got one for you now. Do you hate Powards?
Of course I do,
Alice echoed.
And why is that?
Same reason. Because when I look at you, I see what might have been if not for a twist of fate.
Alice elaborated.
Wow, Jacob said. You're a lot more honest with yourself than most supers.
Thank you,
Alice accepted gracefully. Another hand rose, a few rows over from Alice. This one, male.
Is there any hope for your kind?
Chad asked, without waiting to be called on.
There's always hope, kid. If you take nothing else from this, then please take that.
Jacob answered.
No, there's no science or miracle cure in the works that will make me like you. No one has even been able to figure out what the difference between supers and powereds is. As far as modern science can tell, we're genetically identical. So I'm not expecting some breaking news tomorrow announcing that we can become supers, or even that we can just become human. But I have hope, because if I didn't, then I don't know how I would be able to keep pressing on. And besides, in a world where people can dance on the clouds, it isn't so crazy to hope for the impossible.
Chad accepted the explanation with a silent nod.
Is it true no one knows what causes powereds?
A dark-haired boy in the front called out.
We don't even have a clue. Powereds can be born from supers, regular humans, or other powereds. The stats are across the board, and no one combination has been proven more likely,
Jacob said.
How did your parents take it?
Vince asked quietly. Nick made a note to whip up some cyanide punch and kill everyone he shared that damned dorm with. Two of them had called attention to themselves. Two!
My parents?
Yeah, I mean, most parents are overjoyed to have a kid who is a super. What's it like telling them that you're a powered?
Vince elaborated.
If you're able to tell them, then you're one of the lucky few,
Jacob said.
Most of us get outed by the powers themselves. I sneezed myself right out of a birthday party when I was a kid. When I couldn't do it again by focusing, my secret was pretty much out. As for how they took it, well, I was fortunate. They loved me and tried to be supportive of me. It was hard, though, because every time I came back after I vanished, I could see the disappointment they were hiding. Disappointed that they had almost sired greatness, but instead, all they got was me. It's such a thin line between powered and super. Yet that line may as well be a ravine from how separated we are.
Undoubtedly, some students wanted to chime in with how they wished that line was bigger, so they wouldn't have to talk to or deal with powereds anymore. One didn't qualify for the HCP by being stupid, though, even if they could make it in despite ignorance. Dean Blaine had laid it clearly on the table before the talk began. This was to be constructive questions only.
Anything else would piss off the man who could boot them from the program with nothing more than a word. We